Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the show. My name is Dan Hafner. Welcome to all of you who are rejoining the show. If you've been here before, welcome back. If you've never listened to an episode of Tech Bytes or any of my old shows or anything like that that's been rolled into this, welcome. I'm very, very excited and you know, grateful to have you here listening to the show. So I have another guest on today by the name of Andre Minkov. We're going to talk about an interesting topic here. One that I've been wanting to dive into for a long time, never really had anyone approach me about it or anyone that I really ever sought out about it, to be honest. Just kind of always was kind of percolating in the back of my mind. But this topic is trademarks. And I'm really interested to talk to Andre about some of the stuff inside of the technology world and how all this applies. You know, a lot of people listening to this, you're either in the startup phase or you're interested in technology or building technology. So, you know, when does a trademark become necessary? When is this even necessary? How do you go about this process? What does it mean legally? Like all these different things we're going to ask Andre. So I'll bring him in here in a second. But before we get to that, as always, like I always like to start the show, if you are listening or watching this on YouTube, Spotify, wherever you're listening, please like, rate, review, subscribe, anything like that. Click the button that's super, super helpful. Helps the show grow in the algorithm, helps us get in front of more people. So I really, really appreciate any ratings or reviews or anything like that. So with that out of the way, welcome to the show, Andre. How you doing, sir?
Great. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here. And it's funny, you know, what you said about trademarks, like it's the stuff that's on the back of everyone's mind, but nobody's really thinking about it. And not the most sexy part of everyone's business, but something that everyone knows they should do at some point.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I actually went through this process. I don't think we went to do a trademark, but there was a company that I started out. Well, I didn't start out with. I kind of got into a partnership agreement with them several years ago. And they were very hung up on getting this patent pending for an actual application that we were building. Not having known a lot about it, it was very interesting. Do you know anything about any of that type of stuff? So say I want to build an app or a tech platform. Is a patent something that you can get, something that you should get? Can you give any guidance on that at all?
So look, I mean, I'm not a patent attorney. I understand how patents work. Like I wrote my PhD about all types of IP. So, but like, I don't practice patent law, right? With what you're referring to. So patents, what patents protect is inventions, right? Something new, non-obvious, and something that can be used, something usable, right? It could be a new product or a new method of making a product. And in case of tech, in case of computer apps, it's a bit more tricky, but it's basically a new way of doing something, a new type of doing something, right? Some of them are easier to get than others, and that really requires expertise of someone who's gonna do a proper patent search for you and things like that. As for patent pending, that's a relatively simple thing to do, to file them. They're unique to US. I don't know many other countries that have them. Well, to be frank, I don't know any other countries that have them. And what it does is basically it buys you a year of placeholder when you tell the USPTO that, hey, I think I have something here that I will file for within a year that will be my real patent application. Right. So you don't disclose all the details. You just tell them in brief detail what this is about. And then within a year, you have to file a proper patent application that will build upon that initial disclosure. So is it necessary or not really depends on what the plan is, right? If the plan is to quickly sell it to investors or get investor money, then maybe having that patent pending is a good idea, just for you to be able to say, hey, you know what? I don't know if this is going to go through. I don't know if you want to pursue the patent, but just in case you do want it, well, we'll file for a provisional, right? It's not going to hurt, and it's not going to cost that much money. Whether they're going to do something with it or not is a different story. If you're not planning to get investors, if you're only planning to do it on your own dime, then you probably want to be a bit more critical as to how you utilize, how you file that provisional, what you do with that stuff. But again, all of this coming from a guy who focuses, like, I'm trained in copyright law because this is how I got started in intellectual property. And now my whole business is trademarks. So patents is, when somebody asks, do you guys also do patents? I'm like, no, you know, you need to have brains to do patents. Like, we don't.
Yeah, I mean, and I didn't mean to throw you off down the other path right off the bat. I'm just, like I said, I'm just kind of relating my personal experience with it. And I think a lot of people kind of have this experience. Like, even now to this day, like, if you asked me before we got on this call, like, what's the difference, Dan, what's the difference between a patent and a trademark? I'd probably be like, I might be able to come up with something for you. But now it seems like, you know, like you said, a patent is really for some kind of, they're very useful for physical inventions. I see what you're saying, where an app is like an app really in and of itself, like an app is an app is an app. And it's just like the content of the app that's a little bit different in the ways, but there's like coding and like, there's a whole bunch of different stuff. So, but like, go ahead.
Yeah. So, you know, in my book, I actually explain this in one word for each type of IP. I call them the magic word that are designed to explain what different types of IP do. And so copyright is how. So the magic word is how, because copyright protects content in terms of how you express a certain idea, like whether it's in words or in music. Like the copyright doesn't protect the idea. It copyrights how you expressed it. So that's why you can have million books on marketing, right? Explaining, you know, this is how you market, this is how you build a business. And what copyright protects is the actual words, not the, I'm going to write a best book about marketing. Patents, the magic word is what is the actual invention, the actual idea, the actual genius, you know, spark that someone came up with something. Trademarks is which, because the goal of trademarks is to help the audience to distinguish products and services of one company from identical or similar products and services of someone else. So when you go to a supermarket and you see a long shelf of ketchup, how do you tell which one is which, or toothpaste, right? You see it because this one has this brand and that one has that brand, right? And that's the focus of a trademark, to basically say, You're gonna be Heinz, and you're gonna be not Heinz, something else, right? So that's the function of a trademark, to give companies the ability to help the public tell their products apart from everyone else's. Now, there's design patents, in Canada they're called industrial designs. The magic word there is wow, is because what they protect is the aesthetics, the looks. So like, it could be a special shape of a product, or it could be a certain pattern that's being used. Like, for example, you know how they were selling the lemon juice in the plastic container that looked like a lemon?
Yeah.
Right. So that's the stuff for design patents, because you can have lemon juice in pretty much anything. Right. But someone came up with the idea, let's make this container look like a lemon. And so they were able to get a patent on that. Now, there's trade secrets. And to that, I say the magic word is hush, because the trade secrets are know-how. They're only as good as your ability to keep it secret. The second you disclose it to the world, you own nothing. Right. And you may have those NDAs as contractual agreements with someone, you disclose that information. But if they breach that confidentiality and they disclose it to the world, you can go after them for breach of contract, but you can't sue the world because now everyone knows your secret, right? And the last one, which I think a lot of people don't remember to include in the types of IP, is contracts, just general contracts, or your license agreement, your franchise agreements, and regular agreements that have those IP clauses. And to me, the magic word there is whatever, because contracts can be stronger than any of those other five. They can be stronger than patents, than copyright, than trademarks, because contracts allow you to create rights that never existed before, and they allow you to lose rights that you had. Like, when you go to a factory, for example, and you say, I want to give you an order to make this bike for me, but I'll only do it if you agree not to make similar bikes for anyone else, right? So if they sign that contract, that basically you bought yourself an exclusive relationship with that factory that no law gives you, right? No law says yep. that, you know, the factory can only deal with one company, right? The factory can pick whatever they want. But if you have them sign this, you got yourself an basically a monopoly, right? In a small sense. But also, if you, let's say you wrote a book, right? We actually had a, I remember this case, it was the weirdest case I've probably dealt with, was about a movie, right? So they were filming a movie, and there was the director and there was a producer, and they shot the movie, and then there was a huge fight between the producer and the director, and so happened that the director ended up owning all the copyright on the movie, but the actual film, the actual recording, the physical stuff was owned by producer. And so they had a fight in terms of how they wanted to release it, what they wanted to do, how they wanted to edit it. And the director says, if you change this movie into something I don't want, I won't let you release it because I own the copyright. And producer is like, cool, I'm just going to burn the film and see what you can do without it, with your copyright, right? It was pretty crazy, but so I found a way for them to come to a resolution to settle this. But really, that's the power of a contract. So we kind of veered off a little bit, but I hope it was a useful conversation.
Yeah, that was really helpful. That was really so. What's the name of the book again? Where you go through and you break this down?
The Ultimate Insider's Guide to Intellectual Property.
Okay, The Ultimate Insider's Guide to Intellectual Property. Okay, if you could send me a link for that, we'll put it in the show notes here, because that's super. I love the way you go through that and you just break it down to one word. That's really awesome. Very cool.
Thank you.
Yeah, a couple of things I want to pick up on inside of there that was really interesting. I like the analogy you made with the movie, because I, you know, again, in terms of bringing this back to this tech conversation, it's kind of the same thing, right? You have the movie itself, and you have the content inside of the movie, right?
Yeah.
And it's kind of like any kind of software application, anything, any tech platform, anything like that. There is the platform, and then there's maybe the content inside of it and stuff like that. I think about social media stuff. Like, do you really own the content that you post on TikTok or social media or Facebook or Instagram or anything like that? You know,
you own it, but you give them a license to use it.
Right.
And they couldn't operate without it. And I've seen those posts, like they were very popular, like, oh, Facebook is making you give up on your IP when you sign this license agreement, when you agree to their license agreement. And I'm like, dude, they couldn't operate without it because they are posting your stuff on it. They're showing it to a bunch of people. Without that agreement, anyone who posts on Facebook could sue Facebook for reproducing their work of copyright.
It's the point of the platform.
It is the point of the platform, right? And everywhere Facebook says, we don't own it, but you give us the permission to do whatever, you know, to disclose it, to publish it, to distribute it, and things like that.
Yeah. So, okay. So if I'm, you know, let's go back to even like someone starting out, or even, you know, you don't even have to be a beginner or like something just kickstarting, whether it's a new tech platform, a new app you're doing, a new business, even, when is trademarking relevant? You know, I went through this in my very first startup, where I really didn't know. I didn't have anyone to kind of tell me what to do. I was just kind of Googling, like, hey, do I need a patent for this app, or do I need copyright information? And there's all kinds of different Google answers out there through, like, you know, different business platforms like Zen Business or LegalZoom, or like they'll all say different things. And they all say, well, you could not. They kind of toe this line. So I'm interested, like, you know, and this isn't legal advice. We'll say this, you know, right off the bat for our own disclaimer, but you know, like, what do you recommend for people? Like, when is it time to get this stuff handled?
All right. First of all, you ask yourself a question. Is it possible that this business will still be around under this brand 2, 3, 5, 10 years from now? If you know for sure that it's not going to be around 2 years from now, you probably shouldn't be worrying about trademarks, because the process of getting one takes a year and a half in the US, about 4 years in Canada, right? So if you know for sure that the brand ain't going to be there by the time you get the certificate of trademark registration, there's no point in going in that direction.
Okay.
Assuming you say to yourself, well, if I'm successful in building what I'm trying to build, it will definitely stick around for a few years after that. And I'm not building this to fail, right? I'm assuming that it will be successful. Okay, then you ask yourself a second question. Assuming that it's successful, assuming that it's still around, will the brand be valuable to the business? Will it make me sell more? Will it help people find us better? Will I get more money from will there be any value to this name that I came up with, or that logo that I came up with, a tagline that I came up with for this product? If the answer to that is no, then, well, there's two things that you should do. First, you shouldn't be considering trademarking that. And two, you probably should go back to the drawing board and come up with a brand that you think will be valuable to the product. That, because why would you spend all this time and money building up a brand that's worthless, right? And look, I'm not actually, this is not a trick question. You actually should ask yourself that question, because I see a lot of business owners, they come up with something and then they end up with products with brands that are not very valuable, even to them. And the question is, you could have chosen pretty much anything, right? And any startup, the hardest part is to get the brand off the ground, to get people to know you, to get people to want what you're selling to them, or what you're giving to them, whatever. And then the brand does all the heavy lifting, right? If you think about this, like Google, for example, or you can think of any other brand, but if Google posts a job posting, say, hey, we're looking for someone to come and work for us, there'll be a lineup, a massive lineup of people who want to work there and who are probably going to agree to work for less than market, because they know that having Google on their resume is going to be of significant value to them in their future work. Mm-hmm. When a brand that nobody knows says, hey, work for me, first of all, they're not going to be a lineup. And people who do line up will expect to be above market because you're nobody. Right. And so that's a big value of a brand, even outside of you being able to sell. But even like when you consider customers, it's a lot easier to sell if your brand is well known. How much selling does Apple need to do when they announce, like, hey, there's a new phone out, and they got a lineup at 5 a.m? That's right. All selling that it takes, right? When entrepreneurs and small business owners come up with a product and they say, oh yeah, we got a great new product, nobody gives a shit, right? You have to do a lot of work, and that's the power of the brand. So at some point the brand starts working for you. So assuming you say to yourself, it will be around 2, 3 years from now, it will be valuable, then the question is there a better time to trademark it than now? And again, this is not me trying to sell you on Trademark Factory services. This is just common sense, because here's the thing. There's a point in time when you come up with a brand, right? You sit there in your I don't know, bedroom, bathroom, or whatever. You got this spark of genius and say, I'm going to call this thing X. Bad example now.
Yeah.
I'm gonna call it Y. Right. At that point, the value of that brand is zero, because the only person who knows this is you, right? Mm-hmm. It might have a massive potential value, but the actual value is zero. It's also the most trademarkable this brand will ever be. Right? Because if it is trademarkable at that time, it will only become less and less and less and less trademarkable. And I'm going to explain why. So as the time goes by, the value goes up because you keep making this brand known to more people. You give interviews, you give out business cards, you go to trade shows, you post on social media, you tell everyone, oh, you know, we're building this amazing stuff. It's going to be an amazing, amazing platform. It's going to let you do this. And you talk to people, you talk to investors, you hire people. Like the more you do that, the more people come into contact with your brand, the more valuable it becomes. But it also, the time when it gets less and less trademarkable, because the risk of someone else filing for the same or even similar trademark can kill your ability to trademark that. Wow. And so the longer it takes, the bigger the gap between how valuable it is and how trademarkable it is. Now, imagine this. Imagine if, for whatever stupid reason, Coca-Cola wasn't trademarked. Like they didn't. They forgot, right? Yeah. And someone figured it out. Oh, huh, Coca-Cola isn't trademarked. And they go and trademark Coca-Cola. And they send a demand letter to Coca-Cola saying, hey, you know what? This is my trademark. You can't sell Coca-Cola in the States. And then what, right?
Their hands are tied, yeah.
Then they're either going to have to pay you off, or they're going to have to spend money on lawyers, or all this nonsense, right? But that's the problem with trademarking, because whoever does it first, they have a huge advantage. Because if you're Coca-Cola, yeah, you're going to have, you know, a few extra $1 million to spend on lawyers to fight this. But if you're a small business, if you're making 5-6 figures, every 50 grand that you're going to waste on a lawsuit, or 100K or 150, that you're going to spend on trademark litigation, that's going to be a problem, because you don't have that luxury of just having that extra money to, that's focus, that's money. So you want to get this stuff done right and as soon as possible. Basically, my advice is, as soon as you realize that you're actually serious about building this, go get a trademark. It doesn't cost that much money. So, you know, if you're coding it by yourself, maybe you're not ready yet. But if you're putting together a team, if you're actually getting money, if you're paying money for paid ads, if you're actually treating this as a business, not as a hobby, not as your, you know, student project. Oh, you know, mom, see what I can do. If you're actually planning to put it out to the world, go get a trademark.
No, that's very useful. That's very good. Because right when you were saying that too, like, again, in the past several interviews, I've kind of likened my own experience into this. I'm getting ready to launch something and put something out there. And what you said just makes so much sense. Is like, when it's in your brain, that's when it's the most trademarkable, because it's just your thing. Like, I know, like, a lot of people come to me and they make you sign NDAs, or they're very, very hesitant to give out your idea or show you any screenshots or design previews or anything like that that they may have done in Figma or whatever like that. Because people have this very, very like tight hold on their idea. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because, you know, I really need to rethink my process on this. So I'm glad you came on, because I've always kind of been in the camp of, well, you know, like, launch first, worry about the trademark stuff later, the patent stuff, that kind of, like, because again, like you said, that this first to market idea in this world now is like, it's very, very like those who the first movers act, like the first actors win, like the people who are filling that need first win. And like, you know, like you said, like, I feel like a lot of people can feel like, oh, this copywriting thing, this trademarking thing, it's such a long process, it's getting in the way, it's taking up the resources I don't have right now.
Yeah.
But I think that's a very good line, like you said, because now it's like, okay, I'm running ads, I'm going to shows, I'm doing all this other stuff. And now I'm exposing this to a lot of different people, and I have no control over it. So there is like that. I think that sounds like a pretty, not like a fine line, but a pretty well-defined line to me of when to actually go and do this.
Yeah, you know, there's this battle between people say, well, ideas are worthless, execution is everything, and people say, no, ideas are everything. Like, it's both, right? First, like, if the idea is worthless, why would you spend any time or money developing one, right? Or executing on it? That doesn't make any sense. But of course, without execution, the idea is, you know, it's just going to die, however good it is. And with launch, as you said, there's a lot of stuff that goes into it, right? A launch is more than, you know, you were sitting on the couch all day coming up with just a general idea, and then tomorrow say, oh, okay, launching, right? It's not how it works, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of labor that goes into putting together a product. There's a lot of money that goes into it anyway, right? Or lost opportunities that, you know, you spend coding rather than doing something else, right? If you got a team, you're probably paying the team. If you, you know, there's a lot of stuff that happens before the launch. And so there are the list of things that you do before launch is really up to you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because you make the decision, right? Do we need an office? Maybe, right? If you're paying someone for the office to get the team in physically in one place. Like, to me, maybe that's less important than getting your legal stuff in. I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. Right.
Yeah.
Getting someone who answers the phones. Getting someone, you know, paying someone to, you know, to I don't know to do your social media for you. Right. There's a lot of choices that we as business owners make before we say, oh, we're ready to launch now. To me, launching without securing the rights in that which you're launching. It's just criminal, because I'm going to give you an example. It's one of my favorite examples, really. You know this scooter company, Bird.
Yeah.
So they, in 2021, they were recognized as the fastest company to ever reach $1 billion valuation in 2021. Maybe someone beat them to it. I don't know. But I checked and I saw that they filed their first trademark 13 days after they started the company. Hmm. So they started the company. 13 days later, their trademark application is with the USPTO. That's before they launched. That's before they made any press releases. That's before they announced anything to anybody. They knew that, hey, if we are to be successful with this business of, you know, of allowing our scooters to be rented out by people on the streets and the software that controls all that, if we are to be successful, we need to own the brand. Because if we don't, like, imagine they've got their scooters called Bird and someone else got their scooters called Bird. And the public gets completely screwed on that, and they go get screwed on that as well, because somebody gets, you know, one scooter, the other scooter. So they knew that without owning that brand, they can't operate this model, because the brand is so important, and they plan to be around for 2-3 years, like I said, right? So they made the decision, they filed it 13 days into it. Long before they knew that people would be interested, long before they launched. So that's kind of the example that I think should inspire people who are looking at what they're building, not as a hobby, but something that they actually plan to stick to for some time.
Yeah, that's a very, very, very applicable, good story right there. Very, very useful. Okay, so I want to shift gears and kind of dig into this topic that I like to bring up with everyone anymore, and it's really applicable in here, I think, and I'm interested to get your thoughts on it. And it's the magical, awesome buzzword that we all love and have come to love. It's called AI. So how have you seen artificial intelligence affecting trademark law? If I go into ChatGPT right now and I say, hey, write me this app that does this, this, that, and the other thing. Mm-hmm. You know, does ChatGPT have a trademark right to that because it actually created that? Is it mine? Is like, how is AI throwing a wrench in all this, or is it helping it in some ways?
Well, we use it to do a few things, and okay. I think it was Billie Jean. Maybe someone else can remember. I think it was Billie Jean.
Billie Jean. Love Billie Jean. He's
I think he was here and said, it's not a fight between, it's not that AI is going to replace humans, right? The robots is going to come and fight humans and just, you know, AI is going to replace everybody. So it's that people who use AI will win over people who don't.
Yeah.
Because it's just such a massively valuable tool. So we use it for trademark searches. We use it for some of our marketing. We use it for some other stuff. But it's not yet ready. So here's the thing with AI or with trademarks. Like, there's a billion companies out there that, excuse me, that promise to file your trademark for next to nothing, right? And a small percentage of what they, of the trademarks that they file actually comes through, like about 18%. But the problem is you don't know whether it's good enough until it's too late, right? And like, you file your trademark, and then about 9 months later, USPTO goes back to you and say, we don't like your trademark application. We don't like this, we don't like that, we don't like this. It's called an office action. So they issue it in 68% of the cases out of all trademarks, and in 81% of the trademark applications filed by people who didn't have an attorney of record, like where their trademark wasn't filed by someone specialized in filing trademarks, like an attorney. And the overall statistics is that after all the back and forth, so they send that demand letter, or not demand letter, the office action, saying, here's what we don't like about your trademark application. Then you can hire attorneys to fight and figure out how to improve things and, you know, get this to their liking. After all this back and forth, their overall stats is only 51.7% of trademark applications get approved. So half of them die.
Wow.
Right? So with AI, yeah, of course, you can get AI to draft a trademark application for you. That's easy, right? A monkey can file your trademark application. I mean, the USPTO form is horrible, like as the UI UX thing. But really, you can figure it out. The problem is you don't know how well you did until it's too late. Right? And so I don't think AI is ready to be used without human supervision. Maybe at some point it will be. I don't think we'll see it being ready in the next few years. And I don't think that the governments are ready to give up control. I do think that the existing system is getting outdated, more and more outdated with every year because of how global trademarks are, or brands are, and how flexible they are in terms of the list of goods and services that you can sell under a brand, right? Because the system was built, was designed a long time ago when we only started going into this industrial revolution. Because before, you didn't really need trademarks. Everything was very small. It was very hard for people to copy you. It would cost a lot of money for someone to copy your product. Then when they started having those factories, the people who were investing in those factories went to the government and said, hey, we need a more robust process to stop copycats. And the government said, so this process that you had before, when you had to rely on unfair competition and, you know, fight this every time and prove to the judge, so you don't like that. So no, we want something simpler. And the government said, okay, we're going to give you trademark law, right? And so they made it so that everyone who said, I care about this brand and I want this to be mine, could pay a little bit of money to the government. The government would put a stamp on it and say, okay, now you own it, right? And the assumption was that those who didn't go through the process basically said to the world, I don't really care about my brand all that much. So you could do whatever you want with it,
right?
And so, but that was also based on the idea that trademarks will be done on a per country basis. Because back when this whole thing started, the assumption was copying from country to country was hard. People didn't travel all that much. There was no free exchange of information like we have today, right? And so they thought that if you were big enough of a company to actually sell your products in many countries, you'd probably be able to go and get the same trademark, brand trademark in those other countries, right? Because nobody would beat you to it anyway, right? And the other assumption was that if you're selling a specific type of product, I don't know, if you're selling beverages, yeah, your Coca-Cola, right? It's unlikely that you'll also go and do something completely different under that brand. You're probably not going to be selling clothes. You're probably not going to be organizing events. You're probably not going to be doing podcasts, right? But now this is very different, right? Because today you start with a podcast, tomorrow you start selling shirts. You know, the day after you got a SaaS platform that helps you do something, right? Under the same brand. And so the old approach is now falling apart at the seams. So, and really the governments are not ready to, and this is why it's taking longer and longer and longer, because everyone wants a trademark. And so there are 700,000 trademark applications filed in the US every year. That's like 2,000 a day. That's a lot of
and 50% of them fail ultimately.
Yeah. And so the eventually, you know, AI could play a role in speeding up the process, but I also think that we'll probably come into some more libertarian solution when there's a non-governmental registry that people can rely on. I don't know, could be blockchain, could be something similar to what Amazon is doing with their brand registry. But Amazon brand registry is only good for Amazon, right? And that also relies on filing trademarks with the government system. But who knows? Maybe 10, 20 years from now, it's going to be different.
We'll see. Okay. No, that's really interesting. That's a very good history you gave there too. So yeah, just to wrap up, just kind of this off the wall type of thing. Not really off the wall, but like, you know, we hear about, and I think my wife and I actually watched a movie on Netflix about it. There's, and I think one of the writer's strikes was actually over this type of idea of AI generated content where actors and actresses can like AI can replicate their likeness and their voice and all this other stuff. And, does that fall under trademark or copyright stuff or like,
it would not fall under trademarks because, again, trademarks are about protecting brands. And, you know, we can kind of quickly talk about how we can help entrepreneurs with those. Copyright, maybe, because it generates content that would otherwise be considered, if a human wrote it, would be considered a work of copyright. Yeah. But if AI wrote it and you didn't make any changes to it, yeah, it's becoming a gray territory. But really, it's not that AI is going to claim it, because you can't, right? Yeah. And we had those even before AI. Like, there were people who tried to stretch the laws of copyright and figure out, you know, how far does it go, and they try to basically get copyright protection for every possible combination of notes, right, in music. And in theory, you know, you could do that, but that's not what music is about, right? Because 99% of those combinations just sound horrible, right? Yes, in theory, you know, mathematically, it would amount to a work of music, but it's just shit music, right?
Like,
sometimes take a human to figure out how to make that sound good. And that's where AI is starting to do this, because it's not just going through every possible permutation of, you know, the sequence of notes. It analyzes some of the hits, some of the styles, some of the genres, and it can figure out at least, okay, this is what a typical rock song is going to sound like. Some of it starts to resemble music. So I think with time, we might actually see some decent songs come out of it.
Yeah. Well, I was just gonna say, isn't like 90% of the songs on like the same chord? Like it's like what do they say? Like it's just all the same, you know, the same chords and everything. So interesting. Awesome. Well, I think that's I'll tell you what, you know, I really have kind of started to shift my mindset inside of kind of how I see this. I guess I have been a little bit lackadaisical about this kind of stuff in the past. But now after talking to you, I'm glad I did have you come on the show, because you've got me really turning my wheels. Like maybe I should take this a little bit more seriously in some cases of different things that I've done and things like that. So I thank you for that. So if someone else has gone through the same experience as me and they're like, oh, maybe I should get my shit together and get a trademark on this, what, you know, where can we go to find out more about that?
Yeah, so if you have a brand that you think is going to be valuable, whether it's a brand name, name of your product, name of your service, name of your company, a logo or a tagline, things like that, then you can go to trademarkfactory.com, and there's a big button that will allow you to request a free call with one of our strategy advisors. They'll answer all your questions. We're the only firm in the world that offers trademarking services with a guaranteed result for a guaranteed budget. Because I don't believe that you should be paying us for our time. I don't think that you should be paying us for the action steps we take. If we don't deliver on our promise that, hey, here's your trademark registration certificate, we don't deserve your money. If you come up with a brand that we tell you cannot be done, I don't want to waste your time and our resources filing for a trademark that won't go through. So remember, I said 51.7% is the average. Our success rate is 99.3%.
Oh man, that's a lot better.
And simply because, well, there are two reasons. One is I hate giving people refunds,
Good
right?
reason.
Because I want to make sure, well, I'm a business owner. I want to make sure that we give you what you pay for, right? So to me, every time we give a refund, and we've done this, of course, it means that we missed something. Or it also sometimes means that we got an examiner with the trademarks office who didn't understand what we were trying to tell them and didn't agree with our arguments. And that pisses me off a lot. So that's one reason. And the other reason is, like I said, it's a long process, right? It's not just about refunds to a business owner, right? So it's not just the money that you pay us and then, you know, you might be able to go back. It's all the time that you spend marketing. It's all the time that you go out there thinking that, hey, I'm going to own this. And to me, it's much better to have a hard conversation with you sooner rather than later. So if you come to us and say, hey, I want to trademark Micro-Soft Software Solutions, because I think it's a great name for a software company, and we're going to tell you, dude, that's not going to work. So, well, you know, they haven't trademarked it. Well, yeah, because it's not about identical marks. It's also about all the lookalikes, sound alikes, mean alikes, translations. Like, oh, there's a billion things we do during the search. So I want to tell you up front if it's doable. And if it's doable, we're going to put our guarantee on this. And if it's not, I want you to go back to the drawing board and come up with something else that we can do for you. Or you can get your full refund right there, right then and there. So go to trademarkfactory.com, get on that call with our strategy advisors. They'll answer all your questions. And if you feel there's a good fit, they'll help you out. And by the way, mention Tech Bytes that you came from here, and they'll be able to do something a little special for you.
Well, there you go, guys. You're welcome for that. So, all right. Well, that sounds great. Thank you so much, Andre. I really appreciate this. This was very enlightening, very, very simple. I like that you just kept it very, very, you know, succinct and to the point. I think this has really helped me understand a lot of stuff. Hopefully, it'll help a lot of other people understand this stuff. So thank you very much. Really appreciate you.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. All right, guys. So that is going to be a wrap for this. Hope you guys enjoyed this episode with Andre. Again, I'll put the link for trademarkfactory.com here in the show notes. And you got to send me the link for that book too.
I
While
did. I
we're
put it in the chat in
Oh,
Zoom.
awesome. Awesome. I'll put that in there for you guys too. All right, guys. Well, there you go. There's some resources for you. You know, I think this is really something to think about and to look forward to. Go back and re-listen to this if you're thinking about it. Definitely worth a re-listen as well. And once again, please smash that either subscribe button, like button, rating button, whatever you can do, share this episode with someone who you think might get value out of it or need to listen to it. And that's it. That's it. That's all we wrote, guys. So appreciate all of you. Thank you again, Andre. We'll see you guys in the next episode. See you later.